Christmas-esque story, written by Villainy. Author's notes, set before missing, obviously. The flags dance faster when the fire catches them, just for an instant before their colour fades to black, and the words, already unintelligible, become completely unreadable. The winter silver trees at the edges of the clearing catch the light and throw it back, and John just gets it. Understands the festival, suddenly and viscerally and deep in the bone, some place that mistletoe and fairy lights and shopping day countdowns could never and will never touch him. Although he maybe understands the prayer flags the weird British guy had draped all over his workstation at McMurdo a little better now. He keeps his eyes on the edge of the trees, just a little beyond the flickering flames. The Athosians came first, of course, writing their prayers and draping their flags while Taylor was still trying to persuade Harling that they could be trusted with this. And they can be trusted with this. And they have been trusted with this. Which means their family, which is new and old and right all at once. Unfamiliar language decorates the centre of the tree, wound close to the trunk. Poorly written words in childish hands, tangled low in dried roots. And right at the edge, at the end of one of the branches, Ronan's weirdly neat script, and Taylor's careful few words. John's own crabbed chicken scratch. But it's Rodney's spidery scrawl he's watching when the wind and the flames finally conspire to catch them, send their prayers off to be read, wherever the ancestors might be. The Athosians bow deeply when the whole tree is burning, Taylor gesturing that the team should awkwardly echo, and it feels weirdly solemn and heavy until Harling lifts his head and his hands, and Jesus, the smile on his face. If John were a more philosophical man, he'd maybe be thinking that this is how they win, just a little, every day. But instead he just turns to Ronan and slaps him on the back as Harling's great shout of laughter rings through the clearing, leans down to kiss a startled Taylor's cheek, and slings his arm across Rodney's shoulders as the drinks are brought out and the festival gets going. And later, when the fire has brought the light back to the world and the campfires have been lit from it, the four of them sit quietly and stare into the glow of their flames. "Names," says Ronan, "and no one has to ask whose, and my people, from Taylor." Ashes dust their foreheads and their cheekbones just below their eyes. "See clearly," Taylor had said solemnly, as she touched darkened fingers to their skin, "and think wisely." No one had been surprised by Rodney's snort, but that was Rodney, and that was family, and that was the way things were supposed to be. John cocks his head and squints to his left, caught for a second by the way orange light gilds the angle of a jaw. "Rodney?" "I'm not telling." Shadows define the straight-cut line of his mouth. "They don't come true if you tell." "That's wishes," he answers, stretching lazily. "These are prayers." And Rodney slants him a sardonic sidelong glance, and he laughs, not even needing to hear it. "And you, Colonel?" Taylor is smiling, golden and beautiful. "What did you pray for?"
"I'm not telling if Rodney won't."
"It's nice to have confirmation of your infantile status," Rodney says loftily. And John's smile turns to a grin, turns to a smirk.
"I know you are, but what am I?"
And then later still, when the fire is soft, glowing embers, and Rodney has leaned close enough to John that his lower lip is likely leaving smears of ash across John's ear. "Speak truly." "Be safe," he says, breath soft. That was all. John reaches across to grab Rodney's big, square hand, with callus where none used to be, and deliberately tangles their fingers together, the weaving linked directly to the knots in his stomach. "Yeah," he says, equally as quiet. "Same here."